climax. The vision was nearly there, as he'd hoped. The truth about the strangers might be shown to him in a moment of vivid revelation. He was exhausted, his whole body now coated with the blood-sucking leeches. The experience was so appalling that he wanted to fall to his knees and vomit, but then he might get caught by what was closing in on him. It was near. The set guards outside the suite heard the moaning and panting through the thick door. They prayed he would not call for them.
The one-eyed man kills me! The one-eyed man kills me! The one-eyed man kills me!
Ryan's suspicion that others had been in the Holiday Inn within the past few months were reinforced when it became apparent that the slogan painter had been at work. The white letters were dry, but from their condition it was obvious they hadn't been there long. They were on a wall that ran from the back of the restaurant toward the abandoned swimming pool, with its crust of dried leaves and moss. The message was simple: come here and you die. Ryan picked the best place he could find from which to mount a defense. It had once been a games room, with all manner of vids and pinball machines, decorated by archaic and oddly beautiful artwork, and names like Red Zapper and Whack-A-Mole. There was also the yawning maw of a cracked, dust-filled jacuzzi. The room had only two doors, one of which had strips of reinforced steel across it and could be locked and bolted. JB studied it, puzzled about the necessity for that kind of security in a games room. He liked the fact that since the room overlooked a deep waterway, there was no way an attacker could sneak through a window. From the swirling disturbances in the gray water, it looked like it was well stocked with piranhas. Ryan organized the group into pairs for guard duty, and with help from JB and Christy, arranged a rotation of shifts. They conjectured that since they could easily lock one of the doors to the games room, only the other one had to be guarded.
I think we need another guard farther down the corridor that leads to that place where we first came in. What's it called?
Ryan glanced surreptitiously at Doc. Ryan hoped the old man would respond and show a sign of recovery from his gloom.
The lobby, Mr. Calder.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks. We'll split up like this. Doc, I don't want any shit from you. I know you want to be with Laurie, but we've only got three trained guns now. Me, JB, and Finn here. So Doc, you go with Finn, Laurie with JB, and Christy with me.
Doc removed his dented stovepipe hat and dropped Ryan a low, courtly bow.
At your service, sir.
Christy offered to heat up more of the gooey, green-gray collard greens, polk salad, and gumbo, but there were no takers.
Must be gooder, better food in houses we see. Not this.
Maybe. In the morning, you two girls could go out with Finn and scout around some. See what you can dig up.
Mm-hmm. You got a deal, Captain Carter. You got yourself a real fucking good deal.
During their first break from guard duty, Ryan and Christy found themselves a room down the corridor from the games area, one with no heaps of bones in it. Tugging back the covers on the king-size bed, they cozily snuggled into it. Wary of intrusions or disturbances, they removed only a minimum of clothing. Ryan had deliberately split the bottoms of his dark gray pants so that he could pull them off over his high combat boots. He kept on the brown shirt, still stained with mud and with Hen's blood. The G-12 went on the floor beside the bed, the Sig Sauer P226 9mm pistol beneath one of the two pillows. Christy kicked off the magnificent cowboy boots she'd found in the cold redoubt only days back. The chiseled silver points of the toes gleamed in the pale moonlight that filtered through the rotting drapes. The moon also brought the silver spread-wing falcons on the sides to a cold sheen. Christy rolled down the khaki coveralls, sliding her thin panties to her knees. Entwined, they abandoned themselves to their passion. She sighed once as he entered her, her eyes wide open, looking directly into his face. In the moon glow, the hooked nose and narrow cheeks made him look almost like some ferocious bird of prey, hovering above her, about to rend her. It was an exciting thought. They were awakened during the night by a brief, vicious thunderstorm. Only Doc Tanner slept through it. He lay on his back on the floor of the games room, his mouth hanging open, snoring stentoriously, almost drowning out the howling wind and the pounding rain. all of them were awake, up and dressed by 6 in the morning.
What the fuck is there to eat? Not more of that doomy shit. I look at it in the fucking bowl and I can't recall if I'm just going to eat it or if I've already eaten it and barfed it back up.
I farted all night.
Ryan, me and the girls will go explore some of the houses we passed. Didn't seem too badly damaged or nothing. Gotta be tins and bottles. Anything's better than this stuff.
Sure. Take care. Watch out for any gangs in the Baron Sekhmet. He sounds like a mean mother. It's nearly 6:30. Leave at 7. Be back by 11. If you run into trouble, fire 3 spaced shots and we'll come running.
Just before 7, Ryan found Christy in the suite where they'd made love the night before. She was pulling the sheets across the rumpled bed.
Fire blasted, lover. No one's going to complain that we've messed up the room.
Maybe not, Ryan, but Mother Sonia brought her daughter up proper.
Slumping into a well-padded armchair, he watched her gracefully move, and his eye was caught by something white beneath the bed. He knelt down, peering at it.
What is it?
At his beckoning finger, she joined him on the floor. It was a neat square card, the printing hardly faded in 100 years. It read, "Yes, we have even dusted under here." After Finn and the girls left on their foraging expedition, the others passed the time in their own ways. Doc browsed among the postcards in the dusty lobby. Picking up one from a pile of leaflets, he took it to Ryan.
Attractions in West Lowellton and nearby Lafayette. What a center of activity this must have been before it became a gigantic catafalque.
What's that? Sounds like some old siege weapon.
A building to house the dead, Mr. Dix. As does this entire continent. Oh, but if I had known then what I know now...
And what would that be, Doc?
Ah, no. One day, perhaps, my dear young man. But not now.
When? You know my past, Doc. How about yours? Come on. It can't be that mysterious.
Doc fumbled with the lion's head atop his ebony sword stick.
If I were to tell you, Ryan, then I vow you would not believe it.
I would, Doc. Come on. Now's a good time. Just you, me, and JB here.
I'm sorry. We must fight on the Darkling Plain, swept with confused alarms, Ryan.
How's that?
A great singer once sang that we must keep our dreams as clean as silver, for this may be the last hurrah. Oh, had he but known the truth of that so few years later.
Doc, tell us.
The old man ran a hand through his long gray hair, flipped through the leaflet in his hand, then blandly changed the subject of their conversation.
Well, I see we are but 6 miles from Interstate 10, 9 miles from the Evangeline racetrack. Once I visited the Kentucky Derby. Such a day, Ryan.
J.B. shook his head and walked away, checking the perimeter of the Holiday Inn. Ryan knew that Doc wouldn't open up until he was good and ready, or until some freak of chance broke the crystal goblet of his secret.
A mere 30 miles from Longfellow's Evangeline Oak. That would be a national treasure to behold. Probably there are few such left in the Deathlands.
Ryan couldn't be bothered to ask what this oak tree was, guessing that any explanation would only increase his confusion.
Does that say anything about where you can find food here?